This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. The Inspector General of Police, Tan Sri Khalid Abubakar, recently cautioned Malaysians to be mindful of what they post on social media platforms like Twitter in order not to get on the wrong side of the law. Fung Cheng Leong, a lawyer who specializes in internet law, joins me in the studio now to discuss how the social media space is regulated in Malaysia and the limits to freedom of speech on the internet. So firstly, what did you make of the IGP's statement about policing through Twitter?
Well, there are pros and cons when it comes to policing through Twitter. I'll go through the pro first. A couple of weeks back, I attended this talk by an ex-police officer, and he was explaining how society has evolved into our, you know, internet. When you see an accident or you see an incident on the street, the first thing you do is you take a picture and you post it on Facebook. So with this kind of mentality, it is good for the police to be on the social media space to monitor this type of incident. And they should be around. I mean, let's say, for example, another incident happened. They should be around there to pick up the information instead of waiting for people to come to the police station to make a report.
Because it's so immediate, right?
It's so immediate. Traditionally, any incident, you should go to the police station and make a report. But with social media, the police should be there. But of course, the con side, when it comes to con side, is would be there is this chilling effect. One person gets caught or one person gets charged, the rest of the internet users be worried. It could be me. So the effect is that you instill a certain fear in you when you want to use or you still want to say something online. So a curtail of the freedom of expression.
There's also the issue, I guess, of accuracy, right? Because you can put anything on social media. I mean, right. I could say that somebody came to rob my house when in reality nothing happened and I might just be a drama queen.
That is correct. Of course, you need to wait whether the convenience of making a report online and also the incidence or the likelihood of this being a false report. So pros and cons, da. Sometimes we can't really. I mean, if let's say it's been tweeted a few times and a few fellas, let's say it's happened in the public, a few people has tweeted about it or put it on Facebook, then I think the police should take some sort of action, da.
So, in your experience, or at this point in Malaysia, have there been any situations where the police or authorities of some kind have intervened because of what has been posted on Facebook or on Twitter?
Yes, very much often. I am also personally involved in some matters involving people who use these social media users. Other than the police, of course, coming in to seize, the first thing is, if let's say there's a police report, one thing to do, the investigation officer will come to your place and seize your electronic devices, especially where the posting originate from. So they take your phone, laptop, or any devices that can have access to internet. The next thing is you will also incur, let's say it's a very improper tweet, you will also incur the wrath of other internet users. So in other ways, they will call this thing called doxing. They'll take all your info, whatever info you have publicly. They post picture of your work, post picture of your house, post all your personal information, who are your family members online, and other users will say all sorts of things. And some even making threats like, I'll burn your house down, or if I see you on the streets, we'll telajang you, or something like that. So that is two things that would happen generally.
Most recently, a cartoonist was arrested and two politicians were investigated for tweets that commented on a recent federal court ruling. As far as internet policing goes, is this a troubling development or something that we shouldn't find so surprising?
One, we shouldn't find it to be surprising. Two, it is troubling. Certainly troubling because someone is watching over what you tweet. So, of course, we want to make our expression free to express ourselves and not to incur any wrath thereafter. Of course, there is another question is whether there's freedom to offend or not. So let's say we will offend the authorities, offend the court, offend the police. Would we be given any leeway for that?
Is there a very clear line of distinction drawn between freedom to offend and freedom to incite, I guess? Is there, you know...
freedom incite is certainly not acceptable. If you incite violence or incite any harm on any person, that is not acceptable. But freedom to offend, I think it is part of our freedom of expression. I mean, freedom of expression doesn't say freedom to make everybody happy. So freedom of expression also should include freedom to offend other people as well.
Under Malaysian laws, how is speech and freedom of speech defined in the realm of cyberspace?
Well, hard to define. You can express whatever you want to, but of course, based on the limitation of the law, and especially what comes after you make a statement is you'll come up with things like whether it's seditious or not, whether it falls under Communication Multimedia Act, whether it's annoying, obscene, and all those things. Of course, whether it's defamatory or not. The problem always lies is whether it's seditious or not. So if you say, let's say for example, secession of a Sabah state from Malaysia, is that seditious or not? So it is up to the court to decide. But before that, you will incur the police investigation, seizure of your computers and electronic devices.
So is cyber speech then much the same as real speech? Because a lot of the things that you just described, I would imagine are also things that we're not supposed to do in life, right? I mean, we're not supposed to be running around saying seditious things or saying offensive things,
yes.
But we are protected to a certain extent by freedom of speech.
That is correct. But online, I realize that most people say things that they don't say in real life. So people tend to keep to them. And the platform you use in real life is much smaller. So you're probably saying it to a group of small friends and they will just keep it to themselves and forget about it thereafter. But in the online world, once you say something, it could be retweeted and shared, and it can go to a huge extent. The effect is tremendous.
Last August, a Form 5 student in Penang made headlines when they were investigated under the Sedition Act for liking a Facebook page titled I Love Israel. Mm. Is liking a form of speech in this context?
Liking is certainly a form of speech. It's actually been discussed in some US cases, whether if you like a page, whether it is a certain expression of something. So whether you like, let's say, this page, this person, do you mean you support this person? So in this I Love Israel case, whether you like Israel, whether you like the page I Love Israel means you really love Israel. So, but of course, my argument against that is liking a page doesn't mean that I support the page or whatever idea it is given to the page.
Is it the equivalent of signing a petition?
Not necessary. I like a page if I want to, get updates from this page, for example. So, for example, if let's say I support Barisan Nasional, but I want to get updates from, let's say, Perkasa, then I like Perkasa's page. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I support Perkasa.
It's a form of monitoring as
well,
right?
Some of monitoring, some of getting information. So, but in the US case, they also say that liking a page is a form of protected expression.
So within your context anyway, within the examples that you provided, I guess it wouldn't be considered me liking it until I commented on the page. Liking it doesn't mean anything, but once I start participating, then it changes.
Well, it also depends on the context of your comment. If I say this page is terrible, I don't support anyone here, then it's certainly a non-expression of support.
One Facebook user at the time commented that the student in question should be burned. Isn't this incitement to violence a more malicious thing than liking a Facebook page?
Correct, certainly. Whatever incitement of violence is not acceptable. Of course, hopefully the police will take action against this kind of comment.
So when we say, to go back to that idea of incitement, I think to some people, sometimes just an expression of rage on social media can look like incitement. What falls within this category? What is considered inciting violence or inciting, discord?
Well, that is, it also depends on the context of the comment, for example, posting. For example, I made a comment, let's all go to this person's house and burn it down. I think this is an incitement of violence. The other alternative, softer alternative, is saying that
You know, quite commonly people might say something like, so-and-so has a face that I could punch. I want to punch this person's face, you know. And that's a very, very common internet thing.
Yes.
Would that be considered, and I'm just trying to decide or trying to decipher who would fall within.
It's very subjective, you know. It's to some certain extent, some certain people will find it, wow, this is real excitement, we should get arrested for it.
I guess, but the person with the punchable face would find it excitement.
So I can't really determine, I mean, case-to-case basis, whether it's incitement or not.
So what happens then if someone publishes a tweet or a Facebook post using another person's account? How, you know, how would the law decide what to do in that situation?
Well, we have Section 14A of the Evidence Act 1950. If the comment came from, let's say, your Facebook account, it is deemed to be published by you, unless you prove otherwise. If someone has taken your phone and published something seditious on Facebook, and it is deemed to be your publication.
So assuming it's not something that I published, but let's say I just share something, providing a hyperlink, for example, to allegedly seditious content, is that punishable?
Okay. Then the question is, that's two scenarios here. One is I shared a Facebook posting of another person with no hyperlink, a full posting of it. Let's say, for example, give example of a racial riot, for example. Racial riot is happening in this road. Please don't go there. That sharing of that comment is objectionable. So let's say it falls within one of the offences under Penal Code or Communication Multimedia Act. But let's say, or Seditious Act. But let's say, assuming that I only post one hyperlink, with the title, Rusuhan Kahum Di something something, racial riot somewhere. That sharing of hyperlink is not publication of content. So there are two scenarios looking there. So if the publication of hyperlink is being discussed around the world, in a lot of courts, whether that is publication of content or it's just a place to go and see that page, a link to see that page.
But as of right now, if I share a hyperlink, it's not considered.
It's not considered.
I see. I'm speaking today to Fung Cheng Leong, a lawyer who specializes in internet law, and we're discussing the regulation of the internet. Up next, is the internet free and uncensored? On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me in the studio is Fung Cheng Leong, a lawyer who specializes in internet law. We are discussing the regulation of the internet and particularly the social media space. So one of the guarantees about the internet when it was brought into Malaysia was that it will always be free and uncensored. Is this a guarantee that has been carried out?
To an extent, some parts of our, internet, it's free and for accessible to everyone, but of course some parts of our internet is not accessible. So of course one of them is all our RedTube and all the porn sites. Singapore on the other hands has blocked gambling sites. Malaysia wise, I don't recall any gambling sites being blocked, but if they have been blocked, I'm not surprised. There are even websites that has been blocked for selling prescribed drugs. So if you go to those sites, they will say they will cite the relevant section where they block the site. So in the old days, when you, for example, if you want to go to a block site, there will be no page. Basically, there will be a bank page explaining you can't connect to this page. But now they have been nicer. They will explain to you why this page is blocked. Stop coming here. So and I think I saw on a Facebook page saying that sex.com has been blocked. Blocked.
In your opinion, has the law, and this is worldwide, not just in Malaysia, has the law been able to keep up with the internet? Because, of course, you know, the internet opens up whole new avenues of issues when it comes to freedom of speech, regulation, and do you think that policy and law has been able to keep up with it?
Not really. A lot of our law is still outdated, and recently, I attended a talk, and then one of the drafters of the Communication and Multimedia Act actually commented, the law, when the minister came to see her, she said that, the minister said, please draft a law that can last 15 years, can be as current as 15 years. The Communication Multimedia Act was passed in 1998. So it's been more than 15 years, and in a way, it's a lot of parts of it has not been covered. So another part problem that has not been addressed by Malaysia, but I know that has been addressed, is online harassment. So let's say a lot happened is people with Instagram account, blogs, people who post comments there. Sometimes, of course, it's harmful, but it become not harmful, but becomes annoying. So even there's one case that I know, a lady that I know, she gets email from this guy, just random rant about her workspace, and she gets SMSs or messages out of nowhere. So it becomes really annoying instead of scary.
So right now, when those things happen, are we offered any protection against online harassment?
Currently, not specifically. No, unless it becomes a real threat, to the life, then yes, it becomes helpful. There's law against that. But when it comes to the case where the lady that I mentioned just now, there's nothing that she can do because it's just some random emails and messages coming in.
And when we talk about threats to our lives and us being protected by the law, those are other laws, right? That's just general harassment
laws, not
online specific.
Not online specific. Singapore has passed their online harassment, their harassment act there. And Xia Sui, the blogger, has used it against a Facebook page that has been having a campaign against her. So she managed to get a court order against them.
An amendment to the Evidence Act caused a lot of controversy back in 2012 when it was passed in Parliament. Can you remind us why it was controversial?
I was part of the group who disagreed with this amendment. Basically, the law says that if the posting came from your device, which you have control, custody or control, I can't remember which word, and it comes from your, if publication has your name, your profile or your nickname, or it come from your Wi-Fi or come from your internet account, that publication is deemed to be made by you unless you prove otherwise.
And how do you prove otherwise?
One of the ways is to prove that you are not there, alibi, for example. So, of course,
and not near the internet,
and not near the internet, or someone has, internet connection at that time. But another worrying problem is, it came from your side. Regardless whether you made it or not, you are deemed as the publisher. So people like forum owners, website owners, bloggers, so whoever who posts comments there, they are deemed to be a publisher of those comments. So unlike in your UK position, if let's say there's a complaint against a certain publication, what they do is they file a complaint to the forum owner. Forum owner will take it out, and that is deemed, then they are not deemed as will not be liable for the publication. But in Malaysia, it seems that you will now be, and there are case laws for it, you are now liable for the publication of these comments.
And one common thing that's said about the internet is everything on the internet lives forever. But let's say I try to take measures after something has gone up and to try and take it down. If somebody commented and perhaps I missed it by a couple of days and then this act is taken against me and I take it down, does that change anything?
No, it's the act we apply with no time limit. Once it goes up, it is, you are deemed as a publisher, you are liable for it, regardless whether you take it down or not.
So far, how has the implementation of this been?
We have seen some cases already on this. I think there's one defamation case, two defamation cases actually. One defamation case where the forum owner became liable for what the user have posted. And I think they have to pay a very hefty damages. It's like 6-digit. Of damages, and for something that they didn't post.
You've actually explained already that certain websites in our country are blocked, just like in Singapore, it's gambling, for instance. But when it comes to sexually explicit material, I think most of us can understand what that means. Mm. But what about extremist agendas? Who defines that? And, can the government shut that down?
Yes. Likewise, the law has been drafted quite widely to say to block any type of content. So any type of offensive materials. Of course, when it comes to extremist type of content, they can block the site. they actually, what they do is actually they direct the internet service providers to block the sites. And the internet service providers, pursuant to the license, they will comply with it.
Can internet service providers be sued for filtering or censoring websites?
So far, I have not seen any challenges to it. I mean, for example, let's say I own a website and the ISP decide to block it. Whether I can file a court order to unblock it, I think that would be a very interesting challenge. Whether that can be done, not sure, but I would love to see that.
Because to go back to that idea of extremist agenda, again, like I said, when it comes to sexually explicit content, it's very clear. You know, everybody knows exactly what that means. Mm. But one person's extremist point of view is another person's regular point of view. So if I've been blocked or I've been censored, where would I go? Where would I take my complaint or my case?
Well, first, of course, you can go to the ISP, asking them why they have blocked me. The other alternative is MCMC. Why, for example, why you have decided to block my site? So how? Of course, again, I've not seen any reported cases. How this can be challenged, lah?
And how many people are monitoring all these blocks? You know, how many people are there, kind of sifting through the internet and going, okay, this guy is unacceptable. We have to kick this out. We have to get rid of this.
I think uncountable. There's no. Government-wise, two things. One is the government. Two is NGO. Apparently, there's one NGO who monitors whatever is happening online. If they will make the police make police report against those type of postings, so
that's one side.
Well, one side, but of course, the government side, we do not know who is behind and who is working on it. But of course, nowadays with the IGP on Twitter, all you need to do is just tell IGP, here's offensive material, please take action. And IGP will direct his response to this Police Cyber Investigation Center or something. There's one unit apparently to regulate the social media users.
So I guess in some ways, just as we have a certain amount of anonymity about how much we post online, the people who complain or the people who regulate us also have, I guess, that certain measure of anonymity. Would that be safe to say?
The people who look at us...
Or rather, the people who file the initial complaints, certainly.
Usually, those who file initial complaints, the NGOs, they will be happily putting up a press release. So I don't think they want any anonymity, lah. So, yes.
On that idea of anonymity, though, how much do we actually have online? I think, as you pointed out, a lot of people feel like it's perfectly all right to say anything that they want to say online because, I'm anonymous. But how anonymous are we actually?
Well, right to anonymity is something that has not been widely discussed in Malaysia. Right to privacy is a part, is the wider scope. Where the right of privacy, of course, is the right to control the information about you. So that would include the right of anonymity. So how often our right to privacy is protected? In Malaysia, recent cases, they are recognizing right to privacy plus the thought of invasion of privacy. So basically, if someone invaded your privacy, you can take action against that. But recent cases, it seems to be limited to only when it comes to, sensitive information. For example, pictures of yourself, the intimate parts and around that part area. But other than that...
Not so much.
Not so much. Other than Teo Beng Hock's case, where right to privacy was commented, where he says that the MACC, the RCI report says that the MACC should have respected his right to privacy, especially when it comes to access of his laptop information.
Net neutrality is a debate that's currently taking place in the West. What is it?
Basically, it's the There's no discrimination of the users. So everybody gets the same internet connection, in other words. So if I'm a high school student, I get the same connection with a big corporation. I get the same speed, I get the same quality of connection.
Is that related to the idea that the internet is a human right?
In certain countries, internet is a a recognized human right. Malaysia, again,
not yet.
We'll have to see that.
How do you think the debate on net neutrality will affect internet regulation in our country?
It's really not known to be heavily debated here in Malaysia. But in Malaysia, internet connection wise, we have only a few choices. So the students and the big corporation basically use the same line anyway, same connection.
As YouTube and other video streaming services become more popular in Malaysia, has our government indicated or hinted at what their stance would be in terms of regulation?
Well, we have our Bill of Rights. We have our Communication Multimedia Act guaranteeing us the freedom of... there's no censorship of internet. So far, Malaysian government has not, unlike Pakistan, has blocked YouTube, or Turkey has blocked YouTube. So far, I think it's tolerable.
When we say so far, you know, do you see there to be potential in the future for sites as popular and as commonly used as YouTube to be blocked?
Not surprised if it's to be blocked. One is the law allows them to block it. Of course, when you block a site, doesn't mean you need to block the entire site. So you can actually block a certain page of it. So if this video is objectionable, then they just block this video and the rest of the site still goes on.
Facebook is also famously blocked in some countries, as well as Google. Is that something that might happen with us? I mean, does the law allow for it?
The law allows for it. And if that happens, I think there'll be a riot.
Yeah, pretty much. What does our law say about peer-to-peer technology and internet piracy, which is, of course, a huge international debate?
Peer-to-peer, if you download on stream videos, you download videos for your own personal use, Copyright Act allows private use defense. So unlike in UK and in Australia, if you download and share, you put on you're sharing your videos, I can't remember whether it's the copyright owners will send you a demand letter asking you to pay a certain sum, otherwise they'll sue you in court. So that happens. And of course, that becomes, ISP will be monitoring what you download.
So how do we define internet piracy then, if we are downloading for personal use, for example?
Well, if you are the supplier, and then you are the pirate.
Right, so that's it.
That's it. You're the VCD seller on the street.
So in Malaysia, who's deemed responsible for illegal downloads?
Generally, the person who provides for it. There's one site a couple of months ago was raided by the Ministry of Domestic Trade. It was a forum, I think, hosting links to copyrighted materials.
So who would get prosecuted in a situation like that, including, you know, the illegal DVD seller?
The owner, generally. The operator of the site will get prosecuted.
Should internet service providers be playing a more proactive role in curbing illegal downloads?
In most countries, ISPs are forced, or probably they take part in enforcing the copyright owner's right. So in Malaysia, I'm not sure what is the extent of the assistance.
With digital piracy being such big news and such big money worldwide, has any country figured out how to combat it effectively, would you say?
So far, even in Europe, let's say Pirate Bay, they get the owner of the operators of Pirate Bay, and yet Pirate Bay is still online. So it doesn't seem to be very effective in a way.
I guess if there was something effective, we would all be following them.
Correct.
Yeah, at this point.
And also, when it comes to like peer-to-peer, it's built based on community. So it's thousands and thousands of people providing that same service to everybody. It's basically you should be sharing resources. So you unless you catch every one of them, that will go down. But if you catch one of them, they hit, the rest is still ongoing.
So finally, what would you like to see reviewed and amended in our internet laws?
Well, of course, the repeal of the Section 114A, which we have been fighting all the time, it provides such a disadvantage to internet users like us, makes you worry whether the next tweet will come from you or not. And if you're a website owner, you worry that someone has posted something seditious or then you get into trouble for it. So 114A certainly has to go. And secondly, it's the introduction of the Harassment Act to protect people from being harassed online. So that I know that is coming soon. I said it just now. Hopefully, a bit passed soon.
Thank you very much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Fung Cheng Leong, a lawyer who specialises in internet law. We've been discussing regulating the internet on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.